The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. We've got our regular crew in place and a very special guest. He's called George Calkin and he's a former Times journalist. Welcome to the pod, George.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the Times, those are the days. Quality publication, quality podcast. But anyway, there's enough of that. Lovely to be back on Pod on the Tyne.
It's lovely to have you, mate. It's nice to see you again. Are you okay? Have you had a good couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's been good, thank you. I've been in Oregon with my family, so I was there for Thanksgiving, which is a brilliant, brilliant holiday. So I should use this as an excuse to say hello to my Toon Army Portland crew, who I watched both the Chelsea match and the PSG match with at Goal Bar. 7 o'clock in the morning for Chelsea and then midday for PSG. So it's a big hello to Brett and Shane who organise the whole thing, to Joe and Joe, to James, to PDX Jerseys, to Kath, to Kate, to AJ, to Henry. Some of those people are members of my own family. But had a brilliant time over there and I hope I haven't missed anybody out. But I can definitely recommend an espresso stout at 7:30 in the morning.
That's going to get you sorted out, isn't it?
That sorted me out for the day, I tell you. No way on that day did I have to have a lie down at 11 a.m.
Absolutely not. Does that sound like the kind of thing that would sort you out, Chris Woff, first thing in the morning, an espresso stout?
I could certainly do with a pick-me-up this morning after that last night, getting back to the house at 2:20. The biblical weather on the way across, it was all right on the way back.
It was raining then, frogs.
All the different curses that you could imagine, all of them coming down, yeah. And I also last night I had to sit next to someone else who I don't know why whoever invited him on the podcast I'm quite annoyed about today, but he is here. I'd have to sit next to him last night.
Yeah. Ugh. He's sitting there with possibly the biggest shit eating grin I've ever seen in my life. It's Jacob Whitehead. Jacob, how are you doing?
Good
Do
morning.
I need to ask that question?
Kieran Trippier, Alan Shearer, Bruno Tinder, Chris Woff, Cheryl Cole, George Culkin, Jimmy Nail, Gavin Peacock, Taylor Payne, producer Ollie, Anton Deck. Morning, Declan.
Christ.
Your boys took a hell of a beating, didn't they?
Yep.
Ah, that is awful. That is awful. Yeah. Cut that out.
You try and treat someone with a bit of respect and dignity. You bring them through over the years. You look after them, George.
You welcome them into the bosom of your own home.
You like this.
Well, this is just how I felt about Anthony Gordon before he then stepped away to join the Newcastle side. So really what goes around comes around.
Awful. Get him off.
Absolutely. Right then. So to Goodison Park, Jacob, if you want to step out for a few minutes, that would be great. And we'll speak about last night's game. Sobering night on Merseyside, wasn't it? And it felt like the fixtures and the injuries and all the rest of it finally caught up with us. The Athletic's Daily podcast said Newcastle were demolished at Goodison. And that, to me, seems a little bit harsh, to be honest. Though a few would argue that we deserved anything from the game, George. It wasn't the best night, was it?
No, it wasn't. I mean, yeah, I've got sort of all sorts of thoughts. I mean, obviously I've not chatted about those other games since I've been away, Chelsea and PSG and Man U. And the way can I just go back to the weekend very briefly? I mean, after Man U, I was sort of thinking to myself, I think, and I said this to Chris, I think this is probably the best Newcastle United team I've seen in the course of my supporting life, which goes back for quite a long time. And I'm not necessarily talking about sort of talent or quality of players or any of that, because obviously the 90s were extraordinary team. But just in terms of like resilience, you know, the basis of what a team actually means, you know, everybody pulling together, everybody on the same page, resilient, knowing what their jobs are, fighting for the shirt. I just think this incarnation of Newcastle, this season, last season, is just absolutely up there with anything I've ever seen. But also at the end of Man U, I said to Chris, there's another Bournemouth on the way somewhere. I'm not trying to be clever, but just because of the injuries and how far this team has stretched. So, you know, it's weird. At the moment, after every single Newcastle United defeat, you do get this sort of massive response to it. I think it's okay to say that at Everton last night, Newcastle were poor by their own standards. But there is also quite a lot of mitigation for that performance, and also they're an incredible team. So I think all of those things, you know, rolled into one. They, as soon as you drop with the resources they've got or haven't got at the minute, they're going to lose. And I just think that's totally fair enough. It was a really tough day at the office. I was obviously at Bournemouth a few weeks ago. The response after that had been absolutely brilliant, but they just looked, you know, they just looked knackered again. And then once they go behind, there's no way of changing the game. I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward, really.
Yeah. And Chris, as George kind of alludes to there, it feels like one of these is in the post. When you're playing with this sort of a thin squad in the Premier League against decent quality opposition every week, these sort of results are in the post, aren't they? They're going to come eventually.
Yes, I think they are. But I mean, I made the comparison in my piece this morning with the Bournemouth game, but I also think it was different to the Bournemouth match. The Bournemouth match obviously came on a longer run of games, but also I don't think Newcastle were ever in that. Yeah. I think at Everton, I don't agree that Newcastle were demolished. I don't agree with that headline. They conceded three in the final, there was 10 minutes of added time, 20 minutes, so yeah. But up to that point, I think any result would have probably been a fair result. I think first half Everton with a better side had probably slightly better chances, but then for the first 25 minutes, half an hour of the second half, Newcastle were by far the better team and could and should have probably gone ahead. So they didn't really ever have that moment at Bournemouth, so it was different in that sense, but it was just the longer the game went on, once the crowd got into the match after a couple of sort of decisions, because I actually thought Newcastle managed to quieten Goodison Park fairly well for large periods. It didn't sound as febrile as expected until maybe it's the second half of the second half, and in which case it really did, and that galvanised them. And that's where Newcastle are struggling at the moment, on the road, when fatigue has set in, fourth game in 12 days, all 10 outfield players have played nearly every single minute of that. All of them have played at least 351 of those minutes, which is just a huge load, particularly for someone like Alexander Isak, who's just come back from an injury. Miguel Almiron had a bit of an injury, Fabian Scher as well, and these players keep going. And eventually, when things go against you, and you don't have the St. James's Park crowd to help you, I think that's why they are starting to struggle in these matches away from home.
Yeah, I think kind of on the balance, Everton were slightly unlucky not to be ahead at half time. I think they had an XG of around two, and that Dominic Calvert-Lewin miss was,
that's a big chance, isn't it?
Was quite remarkable. I think I was just sort of silent next to Chris and sort of saying to him, please be offside, and he wasn't. But then yeah, Newcastle really did take control at the start of that second half, and it was kind of, looking back, that those two golden chances arguably do seem quite pivotal. I was just kind of surprised that when Everton did go ahead, that there wasn't that, and this is probably where you could tell there was Newcastle's fatigue. Newcastle didn't really get back into it. They didn't particularly feel like they were going to equalise. And you can maybe see that by the fact that the third Everton goal, there was sort of 29 passes there. This is not a technical team who is really good on the ball. It just kind of shows, I think, the extent to which by that point, towards the end of the game, Newcastle were cooked, really.
But I also think, I mean, that this is a stat which I'm going to use, which I think there is context to, in the fact that at home Newcastle are very good and don't fall behind and don't concede many goals, but also plays into that fatigue. And when Newcastle fall behind, they basically lose, is that they've only collected 1 point from a losing position so far this season, which was at West Ham, when also you technically argue they dropped 2 points given they then went ahead and then conceded to draw. Only Burnley have picked up fewer, which is zero, that Newcastle level with Everton in that sense. And so it is that, I think it's almost the, once they have this sort of mental challenge of everything they're going through. Dan Byrne was on the Monday Night Club on the BBC the other day, and he spoke about how by the second international break, he'd felt like he'd already played a season already. He was talking about the sort of, you play on a Saturday, then you recover on a Sunday, you're flying to Milan on a Monday, you then play in Milan on the Tuesday, and then you've got the rest of that week. And the physical toll that takes in, for you to be in an away ground when, and you don't have the lift of the St. James's Park crowd, you don't have that familiarity, and if things start to go against you, then I think that that's where it almost sets in more than anything. I think that's what you saw against Everton as well. Once the first goal went in, once that mistake had been made, it almost felt like, well, Newcastle haven't really got anything, or we haven't got the ability to get back into this game now. And that's unfortunate to see, but there are very significant mitigating circumstances behind that.
Yeah, I mean, just very much on that point. I mean, there's obviously, there are a lot of people now saying, why haven't changes been made? Why is Eddie Howe sort of reluctant to make changes, whether to his first team or sort of, you know, substitutions during a match. And if you go back to the start of the season, you look at, you know, which was a tough start to the season for Newcastle, let's not forget. In those Man City, Liverpool, Brighton games at the start of the season, he made five changes. He made five substitutions, and he's bringing on people like Harvey Barnes, Murphy, Anderson, Longstaff, Wilson, and has the ability to attempt to chase a game, to change a game. That is just not there anymore. I mean, so it's really difficult because you're, you know, the Chris makes the point about Newcastle not being able to come back from a goal behind. They also don't have the players who have the ability to do that at the minute. I mean, that, you know, you're making changes to patch things up or to give people a breather. You're not making changes to try and win a match because those options just aren't there. Are you expecting Matt Ritchie to go on a run to beat five people and score a goal? No, you're not. Otherwise it's goalkeepers and fullbacks and kids. So it's really tricky. So I do think that stat, I think that stat is a very interesting one, but it's also slightly warped by the circumstances, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the bright sparks for Newcastle in that first half and over the last few weeks as well, Jacob, has been Lewis Miley, hasn't it? And he was decent in that first half against Everton. And over the last few weeks, 17-year-old lad playing in the Premier League, not much game time. He's acquitted himself well, hasn't he?
Yeah, there's one particular moment in the first half which really stood out for me, which is when he was second favourite for a ball with Abdoulaye Doucouré. And Doucouré is a very experienced, very strong Premier League player, like Miley, long, tall, limmy. And Miley sort of came from behind him, managed to out-muscle him away from the ball and set Newcastle off for a chance. Now, it's clear he has technical ability. It's clear that he's able to take on vast amounts of knowledge to even play in Eddie Howe's system. But the fact that at 17, he's already managing to win these sorts of duels while he still has so much space to fill out. I mean, that each game, it feels like you're seeing a new part of his game settle at Premier League level. And so even here in a game where Newcastle were, if not demolished, outplayed and struggling, is absolutely massive. Absolutely massive boon.
The start of that second half, Chris, as we mentioned before, we kind of started to get the upper hand and chances were missed. Anthony Gordon, probably the most profligate, although Miggy had a chance in the first half as well, didn't he, that he kind of scuffed back to the keeper. But Anthony Gordon, maybe snatching at those chances slightly, maybe he's a little bit on the edge of his nerves, a little bit jingly, and just snatched at them a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, the Almiron chance was a big one. I think he had more time than he necessarily realised.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Isak also had a big chance in the first half, ball in the box. But the interesting thing was that Howe, because he didn't feel he could make changes off the bench, he almost tried to change things on the field. Yeah. And so first half, midway through, basically, he switched Gordon and Almer on flanks-wise. Didn't quite work, really. Didn't think it actually did what he wanted. Second half, he then switched them back. But then he switched Gordon to be through the middle and Isak to be on the left. And we saw Isak go on a mazy run. Not quite the equivalent of last season, but he set up one of Gordon's opportunities from that. Gordon himself nicked the ball off James Tarkowski. Really good pressing. Poor ball from Pickford to Tarkowski. Gordon presses. And then almost, snatched at the chance that came up. It came in too quickly. Howe said afterwards that maybe he was almost trying too hard and that the occasion probably did get to him in that sense. But he was the one who looked like he might make something happen, albeit his decision making wasn't quite there. And then things switched later on and Howe went 4-4-2 eventually when it was both Gordon and Isak through the middle. He brought Ritchie on out wide and had Ritchie and Almer on. And I think that you see that he's just trying to find a way to generate something different. Isak had the opportunity when he was played through and took a wonderful first touch and then tries to dink it over Pickford, but just didn't quite get it right and went sort of wide. Isak just doesn't look quite himself yet, and that's entirely understandable. He's come back from an injury, been thrust straight into the starting lineup and having to keep playing, and Newcastle aren't finding him that much, but also he looked spent for large parts of that game, and that's again no criticism of him. That's entirely understandable, and it just needs must at the moment. He is missing both the competition that Callum Wilson provides, but also the ability to rotate, the physical expenditure that he's having to put out, and that's where Newcastle are struggling in so many of these positions. Anthony Gordon can't rotate with Harvey Barnes. Miguel Almirón can't rotate with Jacob Murphy. As George said, you can't bring players off the bench. That same midfield three are having to go over and over again. The physical output there having to go through, it's starting to affect them. And that's why I think fatigue probably plays a point in missing those chances as well.
I think there's a kind of interesting dynamic as well. There's an interesting change between Newcastle being able to, or, you know, certain members of the Newcastle team being able to blast for an hour for 65 minutes and then get replaced by somebody as good as Callum Wilson, for example, or the other way around. And that has definitely been part of their armory last season. And for certain parts of this season, they can't do that. There's a difference between having to reserve your energy and play, knowing that you're going to have to play 100 minutes of football, perhaps, than playing 60 or 65. And it that affects the whole style of the team. You can't be that all energy running absolutely with that full intensity, whether it's Gordon or Miggy. We've seen that happen so many times. They give absolutely everything for 70 minutes and then they get replaced by somebody almost as good or equally good. It's a massive change, that, for the whole team, for the whole squad.
And I think the thing which underscored that was that Newcastle's left-hand side and Gordon and Livramento, who are two of the most energetic players, not just at Newcastle, but the league, were up against an Everton right-hand side with a combined age of 73. Theirs was just 43. You couldn't tell that 30-year gap. And it was more that they then weren't able to sub and change it and rotate to bring players on to actually address what would have been a real weakness of Everton's. And just the fact that they are so fatigued did let Everton off the hook a bit.
Yes, absolutely. And as the tiredness sets in and legs start to get weary, that's where mistakes are made, aren't they? And here's a little bit of audio from Kieran Trippier on what happened last night.
No, like, I'm an experienced player. You know, I take obviously responsibility for the first two goals. You know, I don't hide. We've got to move on now. We've got another big game in 3 days. It's one of those where, you know, it's easy for me to stand there, but you haven't really got an explanation of why it happened. But listen, it's one of those where, you know, you make mistakes. Players make mistakes. I made a couple today. I hold my hands up. I take responsibility. And now it's just about getting on the bike again and getting ready for the next big game in 3 days against Spurs. Yeah, for me personally, obviously, very disappointed because of my own actions in certain moments in the game. But that's something that I'll deal with. I'm an experienced player where I can, you know, I can handle these things. But the best thing about it is a game in 3 days where we can try and put it right.
Yeah, there we go. Chris, Kieran Trippier, he's the kind of player who's going to hold his hands up, isn't he, when he drops clangers. But it's a drop in the ocean, isn't it, compared to his credit column. Can you simply put it down to fatigue?
I think to a large extent you can. And I'd go for mental fatigue as much as anything else, as I kept saying, bringing that Brock to that point from Dan Byrne. But I mean, immediately after the game finished, I was going down to Eddie Howe's press conference and Jacob said, do you want me to go to the mix zone? Who do you want me to try and get for Khan? Do you want me to try and get Kieran Trippier? And I said, yes, please, if you can. And for large parts, most players, that would be a fool's errand. They would not step up and come through and put up. But he came and he even said in one of his answers to Jacob, I don't hide. He isn't going to hide. He's coming. He put his hands up. He talks about making his mistakes. And they were big mistakes. And it was almost, I think, the first one probably led to the second one as well. He's probably overthinking it almost too much. And then I can't make a mistake. But then that leads to the mistake. And Everton sort of picked their moments to press in those times. The first one, it's Dwight McNeil nicks it, ends up running through, has the shot which deflects off Cher and loops over Martin Dubravka. The second one is Harrison nicks the ball and he gets forward, crosses. McNeil doesn't get there, but Decore scores. And that's been a bit of a frustration for Newcastle in that sense, is that they had limited Everton in the second half. First half, they'd struggled with balls in the box. Second balls, Dominic Calvert-Lewin getting a lot in the air. But I thought Jamal Lascelles responded particularly well to that in second half. I thought he'd been comfortable until he got injured. But Kieran Trippier has provided 8 assists already this season from right back for Newcastle. He is vital for everything Newcastle do on and off the pitch. Eddie Howe called him, spoke about him being the catalyst for so much that has happened at Newcastle since he arrived. We've spoken about that before. And no, it was probably his lowest or worst performance in a black and white shirt for Newcastle since he's arrived. but that's up against some glorious moments, and there haven't been that many poor performances like that. So certainly he's not going to be someone who anyone's going to call out for that.
So 13 months ago, I wrote a piece which was headlined, "I Love Kieran Trippier."
Remember that?
Now, as listeners to the podcast know, I do spread my love around, I mean, fairly thinly, thickly. I tend to fall in love with fullbacks, let's be honest. And I've reposted that piece on X or Twitter. And my favourite comment on it is, "This is absolute embarrassing fanboy nonsense from Culkin," which it totally was. Totally accept that criticism. I'm very proud of that. Because you know, I think we're all fans of Kieran Trippier. He's been absolutely incredible. He's one of the best players we've had in arguably ever, certainly in the club's recent history. He's been transformative. He's been a transformative signing. He's transformed things off the pitch, on the pitch. He's a captain, whether he's actually got the armband or not. He's the face post takeover of Eddie Howe's team. He's insanely good. And as Chris says, of course he would come out afterwards last night and take ownership of, which I think is how we have to phrase it these days, of his performance and his mistakes. He could have 10 games like that and I would still love him. He's been absolutely incredible. Deserves a break.
He does.
But yeah, what a player. What a player.
It's such a good sign of a healthy squad for that, the willingness to take accountability. Because I'm sure that we've all probably covered or watched teams where when things aren't going well or they are in slump or they are tired, they either just walk past or kind of talk about everything as a collective. But just when players individually are happy and comfortable enough and know that an error was there and they can take responsibility for it and people won't get on their backs, it's not just that the squad's healthy, but the overall environment around the squad is good.
I mean, I remember not so long ago that a young lad called Jamal Lascelles was one of the only players in the Newcastle dressing room who actually stood up, put his head above the parapet and said, you know, this isn't good enough. And now it seems like we've got a team full of those type of players who are prepared to work for each other, who are prepared to, you know, take the knocks, get back up and get on with it. And I mean, Trippier will bounce back from this. He's the kind of professional where this, you know, he'll chew him up for a little bit, but he'll put this out of his mind and he'll be back to his very best straight away, I'd imagine. He's that kind of player.
It's a great point, Tenor, and that's exactly what I'm meaning when I talk about this team being the best team in Newcastle's recent history, in their modern history. I just think, you know, it's a cliche to say, talk about relationships and how well everyone gets on and no bad apples when a team is doing well, but it's genuine about this team. There is that sort of ethos within it that they're all in it together. And by the way, I think that sort of extends to the coaching staff and above as well. And also, you know, Newcastle fans, that's been one of the great stories over the past couple of years. But they're just an incredible unit and they will bounce back from it. I hope they can bounce back in time for these two games coming up, because they're massive matches. It's going to be really, really tough for them. But they're, you know, they're absolutely honest. They deserve huge credit. And yeah, I would expect nothing else from Kieran Trippier. He always sort of surprises you in some ways. I mean, I wrote in that piece about him, you know, it was like last season going up to him and saying, bloody hell, you know, can you believe that we're third, you know, Newcastle are third and fourth? And of course he said, yeah, I can believe it. You know, I know. I mean, he's got that sort of
belief, isn't it?
Yeah, just that sort of belief. And he knows exactly what's going on. He's amongst an ocean of positives, he's right up there.
And Chris, you compared this performance to the Bournemouth game. It was similar scenes towards the end of the game with the home side flooding forward, though this wasn't quite as bad, was it? The issue with this is it comes in the middle of a run of fixtures rather than at the end. And with the Bournemouth game, Newcastle had time and a chance to bounce back, didn't they?
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, there were similarities in the way that it felt like at Bournemouth, but I thought that Newcastle were in this game far more, and I don't think either side deserved to win 3-0. If Newcastle had won 3-0 in the end last night, it wouldn't have been a fair result either. I think it was very close for large parts of the match, and Newcastle were not at the best throughout, but not in the same way that they were at Bournemouth. And yeah, as I say, once they conceded the first goal, I think that was the game done. I don't think Newcastle were ever really getting back into it. Yeah. And that's where Everton did start flooding forward. And the three goals really were cruel for them to concede that many that late on, the 10 minutes of injury time. The fixtures that keep coming is a concern, because as you mentioned, after Bournemouth, they did then have 2 weeks rest that allowed Alexander Isak to come back. It allowed Miguel Almiron to be all right, Fabian Schär to be all right. which they wouldn't have been if they'd had a game immediately afterwards. So they at least had a couple of players coming back or who weren't actually going to be sidelined with the injuries they picked up. They also picked up more because Sean Longstaff was then out. But now after this one, I mean, you look at Jamal Lascelles limping, had to come off. Eddie Howe described it as a dead leg and said he hoped it wasn't serious, but Jacob saw him walking through the mix zone looking difficult in terms of his movement, limping. So you'd say he has to be a serious doubt for Sunday at the very least. Emil Kraft came on at centre-back and we know he's performed well there in the Carabao Cup so far this season, but it's not really his position out and out, and you don't want to keep losing those players. No. Jamal Lascelles is the club captain as well and has proven himself over the last few weeks, and so you just worry how these 10 outfield players, if it is going to be the same 10, it'd be 9 if Jamal Lascelles can't play. How can they play again on Sunday? The load they've had to go through, the fixtures to come after that, Milan on the Wednesday. They're in a run of 10 games inside 30 days and they're only halfway through it. And this is just, it's just such a huge physical effort for them all. And that's where you do worry, given that some players should be back imminently, but whether they're back for Sunday, I think is another matter.
I think it's the mental side of it too, which is absolutely key at this point. I mean, after Bournemouth, it's not as if Eddie Howe got loads of time on the training ground with his players to sort of reset, because most of them were either injured or suspended or away. So he had a very small number of people, but it gave everyone a chance to sort of take a breath. And, you know, those sort of moments are really important for a team too. It's like, think about something else. If you're doing international football, that gives you something else to focus on. Yes, it might tire you physically, but it gives you something new and something different. And those things can be really important. There's none of that this time. It's just straight into the next fixture. And that's where it's not that I fear for them, but I definitely feel for them.
Yeah.
Because after a game like Everton, when they are clearly physically absolutely at sort of maximum output, you want that chance to take a step back if possible. And they just can't do that. That's my fear. So there is that physical side of it, which is massively important, but there's no respite in terms of the mental side either.
How would you guys prioritise between the Spurs game coming up and the Milan game, even if Howe has the ability to prioritise one or the other? Because there's a point where decisions need to be made.
Yeah, it's a great shout. I mean, you know, we'll come on to talk about Spurs a bit, but it's that thing of, you know, okay, he's got to make, so I've seen a lot of this on social media. He's got to make changes for Spurs. He's got to start giving people minutes. He's got to give people a rest, but give people a rest for what? I mean, that's the thing. Because, you know, the Premier League is is absolutely the bread and butter for Newcastle. I mean, in the past, I would say, you know, I would love Newcastle to put more focus on cup competitions when we're talking about the previous regime. You can't go into that last Champions League game with anything other than full pelt. But, you know, Spurs, you know, this is Newcastle's right. You know, these teams are now Newcastle's direct rivals for places in the top six, top eight, whatever. So it's really tricky, particularly when there are so few sort of options in terms of game changing options on the bench in the squad. I honestly don't know, Jacob. I mean, I'm fascinated to know what Chris thinks. I mean, I just don't.
I'm of the opinion that, and this is a very difficult decision to make, and there aren't really options to bring in or that many, but I would be prioritising the Milan game because I think if Newcastle win on Wednesday, they have a very good chance of going through in the Champions League, because I think PSG, they've got to go to Dortmund and get something, as our friend said on the podcast, sent in for the email the podcast, and that's going to be difficult. And so I think that is a huge opportunity for Newcastle. Spurs, yes, is a big game and they are direct rivals, but there's still the remainder of the season in the Premier League for Newcastle. This is now or never in the Champions League for Newcastle. So that'd be my opinion. Also, you likely get more benefit of resting players between now and Wednesday than you are if you try to keep the same team going for Sunday and then see what happens afterwards.
Yeah.
That's my opinion, but it doesn't mean that I'm right, and it also doesn't mean that he's actually able to do that.
I mean, the other side of that, though, and I'm not saying this is one thing necessarily leads to the other, but if you prioritise Milan and then lose at Spurs, then have you shot yourself in the foot in terms of momentum? You also want momentum.
The Pardew issue he had in the Europa League, didn't he, with Benfica and Sunderland, and he ended up basically splitting resources and didn't win either.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I do think this is really, really, you know, I do think this is really tricky.
It is. Jacob, would you like the last word? We've given you enough stick about Everton over the years, haven't we? So would you like the last word, the last laugh, shall we say, before we move on?
Don't give him that.
He's part of the podcast. Come on, let him have it.
4-0 on aggregate this season, Jordan Pickford dancing.
Oh, God. Taylor, what have you done? He's mentioned Jordan Pickford in a gloating sense. That he should be booted off. Thanks, Jacob. Thanks for everything you've done. This is your final appearance on.
He should be booted off by Jordan Pickford. He loves booting things, doesn't he?
But this is why it's fun, though, right? I mean, like, Jordan Pickford gets grief every single time he does anything from Newcastle fans. If he was just purely a punching bag, would it be the same? You need a little bit of... No, you need him to have the victim mode. You need to have him to be the victor sometimes, to be the villain, to keep the fun there, don't you?
That's fair enough.
Yeah, it's both hilarious and sort of nice to see how pumped up he gets for Newcastle matches. It's hilarious. It's what it's all about. And, of course, you know, we're now building up to the first derby match for such a long time, which is incredible and very, very exciting. I can't wait for that personally.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of Newcastle fans would sort of say they don't want to play those matches, but you know, the game against Everton shows why derby matches are so sort of vital and so much part of our heritage. The stick that Pickford gets is all about that. So yeah, fair play to him. He was pumped up for it, but
up for Scouse Mackhams.
Stop it. Right then, let's move on before it gets violent. Give your loved ones the gift of The Athletic this year for Christmas. Go to theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod before January 1st and choose between £19.99, that's pounds, dollars or euros, for 1 year subscription, or £39.99 for 2 years. And if that's not value, I don't know what is. We'll be back just after this break. So we've got a Super Sunday on the horizon, and Sunday's first game will be at Gateshead International Stadium, a 1 p.m. kickoff for the Lasses in the FA Cup against Stoke City. Stoke are mid-table in the FAWNL Northern Premier Division, so Langley's tabletop and mags should have plenty of confidence going into that one. Adult tickets just a fiver, with under-17s at just £1. They're going well, George, aren't they? They're doing really well.
Yeah, brilliantly. I got back from a holiday on Saturday night and managed to go straight from the airport to St. James's. I wasn't able to go to the game on Sunday, sadly. But, should be a good one. They're doing brilliantly. They're doing us all proud. They're showing how it's possible to fight on in all competitions and do really well. So yeah, more of that, please.
Absolutely. Super Sunday Part 2, for the first time in recent weeks, people are actually talking about a 3-day gap between games as being a positive. Howe's men have an almost immediate opportunity to bounce back, but it's away from home, Chris, isn't it, yet again?
Yeah, I'm not sure I see it as a positive in that sense. I know that players like to talk about, and managers sometimes talk about, you want that game to come up quickly after a defeat, but I just think physically and mentally, where Newcastle are at, the how stretched they are squad-wise, I'm not sure that this rapid turnaround is good for them. Spurs also have a similar turnaround, so in that sense, and they are obviously in poor form. I think it's only 1 point from the last 5 games, all of which they've led. I think they've set a new record for having led in 5 Premier League games and not won any of them. So they lost against West Ham. At least they have more players to choose from, but they also have some key injuries. And Newcastle have positive memories of going there. Eddie Howe mentioned them after the game at Everton last night, that Newcastle went there, and it was probably the moment I think Newcastle really arrived as an elite team under Eddie Howe and realised how good they were. They went to Spurs and properly turned them over last season, and the scoreline probably flattered Spurs in the end, actually. But this is going to be probably a very similar Newcastle 11. The only players who might return, Howe talked about some of the injured players having trained on Tyneside yesterday as Newcastle were across the Goodison Park. He didn't name specifics, but we know that Sean Longstaff's probably not too far away. Joe Willock isn't meant to be too serious. Callum Wilson probably isn't too far in the distant future. Harvey Barnes, hopefully within the next week or two. And Sven Botman, depending on how his knee reacts. So they're the players you're looking at who hopefully could be back sometime soon. But I think Spurs might come just a little bit too soon for them, most of them, if not all of them.
I'd just like to reiterate as well, I don't think it's a positive that we have to play Spurs in 3 days. And I would like to go on the record and propose a 2-month winter break starting now, finishing around about the second week of February, something like that. Just give us a chance, you know. All in favour, say aye.
Aye, yeah, very sensible.
Yeah, good. That's carried. I'll get on the FA and get that
but, sorted. But you know, I think the other thing is we've sort of not been negative, but talked about sort of that those you know feelings of trepidation about this fixture list. The other thing to say, the way to turn that around is to talk about the resilience of this squad and the way they've been able to pull out results and pull out great performances sometimes when you've not expected it. You go back to PSG, you know. Not very long ago, what happened at the end of that match? Eddie Howe not making a substitute, I think I'm right in saying, and then taking that and going to Manchester United and, you know, putting in a performance like that, admittedly against the worst Manchester United team I've ever seen. But, yeah. You know, I they have these incredible depths of resilience and togetherness and spirit. And so, albeit things look a bit gloomy this morning after what happened last night, and there aren't many options to change things, they are an incredible group, and they've certainly got it within their power to pull a result out.
It's a difficult one to predict this, Jacob, isn't it? Spurs started at 100 mile per hour at the start of the season, but they've kind of stuttered a bit. They've had a few dodgy results, and they've had a few injuries as well. Who knows with this one?
Yeah, we talked about in the Everton game how Newcastle were in the game for so long and how it could have been going either way after 60 minutes. I feel like playing Spurs really adds to the element of randomness because they take on such a high risk approach with just the very way they play and their utter kind of, you know, how uncompromising Postecoglou is to move away from that. Like the game just changes in an absolute knife edge depending on how open it is. It'll be interesting to see how Newcastle decide to approach that, if they decide almost they want to go toe-to-toe with Tottenham and sort of accept it'll be a really open game and try and sort of beat them in a sword fight, or whether Howell sort of rarely, because he doesn't usually do this, but wants to shut it down a little bit more and kind of use what at this point is probably Newcastle's superior organisation to maybe sort of grind out a little bit more of a result away from home. I could really see it going two quite different directions stylistically.
And Chris, Eddie Howe said that the Lascelles injury isn't too serious and it's a dead leg. I mean, we're not entirely sure on that one, are we? Is there any chance of anybody else returning? I know Sven Botman's being close, putting something on social media earlier this week.
Well, I sort of went through them before where I'd be surprised if they're actually there for Sunday.
Attention,
maybe
Taylor.
One or two might make the squad.
Pay attention.
Oh, sorry.
Are you actually listening to it? I mean,
Not normally, no. No, I'm just waiting for you to finish talking and then I do my bit.
Right. Well, in terms of like tired performances and squads being restricted, I mean, the least you could do is like pay attention to your fucking teammate. He's gone through the entire squad and all the injuries about 2 minutes ago.
Did he? All right, okay.
Yeah, who are you, Kieran Trippier?
Yeah, I've let it slip. I'm sorry, I do apologise.
You've let it slip, yeah. I mean, we'll forgive you.
Listen,
we'll forgive you.
I put my hands up. I accept
right.
it. Let's move
okay.
on.
Okay, right, fair yeah. enough.
Good.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough. Chris, it has been a tough couple of days for you, though, hasn't it? You asked Eddie Howe about his lineups and got a typically frosty response. Have a listen to this.
Eddie, you've mentioned that the sort of physical load on the players. I mean, physically, can this same group go again on Sunday, or will he simply have to make changes?
Well, we'll wait and see, Chris. I don't know. We'll, as we always do, we don't just put the same players out there just for the sake of it. We have to analyse how they're feeling. You know, are they able to perform? I felt there was enough of a gap between Manchester United and this game for us to perform very well physically. The mental aspect is a much more harder thing to analyse. So let's see how they look in the next couple of days.
He might as well have said, why don't you just fuck off, Chris?
I can't believe he mansplained the concept of tiredness to you.
Yeah, he wasn't having that at all, was he? I mean, it was one of those weird ones as well, where it's like, beforehand, this is very boring, but journalistically, usually we'd have the pre-match press conference that everyone knows about before another Premier League match, but because there's such a tight turnaround between the two, immediately after the game, Newcastle had the usual post-match press conference, then they had like a sort of pre-Spurs press conference, and they're usually rubbish anyway when they follow off the back of another one, but when you've just lost 3-0 at Everton, and you've got no players available, and the manager just doesn't want to be there, it makes the whole thing a waste of time for everyone. So yes, I think I was testing Eddie Howe's patience to the very limit there.
It's very difficult. I mean, he was asked a question on that Amazon Prime coverage about sort of exhaustion and tiredness and things like that. And he said, well, I can't say that because I have to ask the same players to, you know, to go again against Spurs. And so, Yeah, I mean, and not that he, you know, not that he sort of operates in a kind of excuse sort of culture thing. I mean, the whole point at Newcastle is to not do that. But, you know, it's not something that he can really focus on because for that very reason. The other thing I have to point out is that we do laugh about Chris asking stupid questions, but in spite of that, Eddie is very fond of Chris. I know that for a fact. So bear that in mind. Bear that in mind when you hear his slightly frosty responses.
Absolutely lovely stuff. Right then, one of the main talking points this week on social media and around the club, as fans were asked various questions in a survey. We'll aim to cover these issues in a bit more depth fairly soon, but Chris, you think they may have fluffed a well-intentioned move with this.
Yeah, I mean, this had almost been trailed to a certain extent by Darren Eales at the supporter event a couple of weeks ago, where he'd sort of said that the supporters will be asked about any future changes to St James's Park or stadium moves or the like, and that they get supporters involved. And I think that is a hugely positive move. I think for the club to want to engage with supporters and to get their opinion is exactly how it should be. The survey itself, the way that it's been gone about, the questions and focusing on sushi or whatever and corporate tickets and the price of tickets going forward, and then a last bit about whether fans would want to move. I think the survey itself maybe could have been handled more delicately. I think maybe there could have been further time spent on it. Maybe it should have been done in a slightly different way, and hopefully the club learn from that and then go back on it. But I don't think the actual willingness to listen, hopefully, to supporters and want to engage with them is a negative. I just think maybe the way that the survey was slanted, the way that it was presented, and the way that a lot of fans felt that most of it was about corporate or the price of tickets or the price of food, that really wasn't necessarily their priority going forward. But as I say, the intention very much I support. I think maybe it was just bungled a little bit in terms of how it's actually gone about in this first move.
Yes, well, there we go. Any more before we finish up for the day, chaps?
Just one thing for me is slightly disappointing to hear in the first half. Just for a short amount of time, there was some poverty chanting from Newcastle and towards Everton, and just obviously it goes without saying that this is a sad thing, and it probably is just a minority of fans, but kind of given how many similarities between Newcastle and Liverpool there are as cities in terms of places which both have historically wanted more investment from the government, which both want more, which both kind of have their own issues to talk about, and which have both kind of a long history of solidarity and sort of proud, working class history. It's, you know, something which isn't nice to see. And just, you know, if you see any of it going on, just tap your mate on the shoulder about it and have a word. But
absolutely.
It's a good point, Jacob. We shouldn't forget, I mean, A, how successful, if that's totally the wrong word, but how successful the Newcastle Fans Food Bank has been in terms of uniting the causes of football and anti-poverty together as being outside St James's Park. Newcastle, you know, the people that founded Newcastle Fans Food Bank took inspiration from what was happening on Merseyside. But Newcastle, we have the biggest, i.e. the busiest food bank on our doorstep in this city. It makes absolutely no sense. And at a time when, you know, things in those terms, in terms of cost of living and all the rest of it, is only going to get worse, particularly at this time of year. Yeah. I mean, totally understand banter and historical banter and, you know, and all the taking the piss and all the rest of it. But honestly, it's time for that one to be retired.
Yeah, there's just absolutely no need for it, is there? Right then. I think we'll finish up, Lance. Thank you very much for your time. Chris Woff, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. Well, this will be Jacob Whitehead's last appearance, as George has said. So everyone's just say bye to him. This is his obituary on the pot on the time. So.
Yeah. Thanks, Jacob. Thanks for your time, mate. It's been lovely knowing you.
What a way to go out, if so. A blaze of glory. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Going down swinging.
I'll see you in the stars, lads.
How many comebacks and how many goodbyes has this
It's like
lad
the
had?
Kiss. It's Kiss, isn't it? The final tour. The final tour by Kiss. The you know, the end of the line tour by Kiss.
Yeah, but they're coming back as AI-generated robots or something, aren't they? Like ABBA.
That sounds about
so
right,
So that's what Jacob would get, an AI Jacob. No more AI Culkin.
If Jacob comes back to the next podcast dressed as Gene Simmons, I'll be very impressed, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, we've gone dark there, but yeah.
Right, okay, that's it. Thank you very much for listening. Email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com if you want to get in touch. Thank you very much for listening. We shall speak to you on Monday. Look after yourselves. Have a good weekend. Take care. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, goodbye.